Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
From the Air America affiliate in Madison, Wisconsin, the Mike 92.1. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman this afternoon. Thank you for joining me. And if you are tuning in to catch an update on what we discussed yesterday on the Tom Hartman Program, stay tuned. We have breaking news and more information about the story we started yesterday that has just snowballed from there. We will be joined in the final hour of the Tom Hartman Show by Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, who I was in contact with yesterday. And here's a story if you missed it. John McCain's campaign is sending out millions of absentee ballots to likely Barack Obama voters. Now, that may beg the question, why is it that John McCain is sending out absentee ballots to likely Barack Obama voters? And I don't have an answer to that question, which is why I asked Brad to join us this afternoon, and he will do so in the last hour. The bottom line is this, and it is simple, that the GOP is not known for counting every vote, and that we know that Karl Rove got his political start through mass mailings like this, and we know that caging techniques were used in Ohio 4 years ago just with techniques just like this, techniques that we are seeing again now. Ask yourself why John McCain is sending absentee ballot applications to Barack Obama supporters or likely Barack Obama voters, and then you tell me why you think these are going out in mass, 1 million alone in the state of Ohio. We took calls all hour yesterday of people who were getting absentee ballot application forms from the John McCain campaign who were Barack Obama supporters, who found that the address for their city clerk was wrong on the mail, on the application return address, who found that the application itself was overly complicated, was inaccurate. In fact, in one case in Ohio, we now know that the John McCain absentee ballot application has scrubbed as many as 750 people from the voter rolls in one county alone. You know, this is the kind of work, and this is something after the show yesterday I realized, this is the sort of work that a community organizer needs to take on. Because if we don't have our vote, what do we have? And it was interesting last night that there was a forum on service with the presidential candidates, and the topic of community organizer was broached. The issue of why it is John McCain's campaign decided to attack community organizers. And John McCain was asked that last night, and I bring this up because if we are looking for solutions to making sure every vote counts, our solutions start with these community organizers, which the McCain campaign clearly maligned during their Republican convention. But what does John McCain, the candidate, think about community organizing?
Senator, at the Republican convention, a couple of speakers, most notably your running mate, vice presidential nominee Sarah Palin, made somewhat derisive comments about Senator Obama's experience as a community organizer. I've heard you say you haven't taken that tone. So I guess my question is, are you saying to others in your campaign and your supporters that that's not the kind of language you want to hear?
Yeah.
Well, how are you approaching that?
First of all, this is a tough business. Second of all, I think the tone of this whole campaign would have been very different if Senator Obama had accepted my request for us to appear in town hall meetings all over America, the same way Jack Kennedy and Barry Goldwater had agreed to do so.
That is at least the second time John McCain has explained away his dirty, rotten campaign by saying, well, Barack Obama wouldn't agree to my organized town hall meetings. Well, maybe it's because you had something to do with organizing it. So just to be clear here, they're bashing Barack Obama for being a community organizer, according to presidential candidate John McCain, because he refused John McCain's scheduled town hall meetings. What does Barack Obama think of being attacked for being a community organizer?
Yeah, we yak in the Senate. They actually have to fill potholes and trim trees and make sure the garbage is taken away. So I was surprised by the several remarks around community organizing and belittling it. You know, when I think about the choice I made as a 23, 24-year-old to spend 3 years working with churches to help people help themselves. No insult to the president of this fine institution, but it was the best education I ever had.
Now, this wasn't a debate last night, but we're going to make it as such, where the two candidates spoke separately. We will combine their, along with the vice presidential candidate's statements. I mean, how do you compare community organizing to being, say, I don't know, a small town mayor in Alaska, Senator McCain?
And so I praise anyone who serves this nation in capacities that, frankly, we all know that could have been far more financially rewarding to individuals rather than doing what they did.
Less significant than the work of a small town mayor?
I think a small town mayor has very great responsibilities. They have responsibility for the budget. They have hiring and firing of people. They have great responsibilities. They have to stand for election.
Oh, elections are such a grave responsibility. Indeed, so much more so than filling potholes, making sure people get the trash out and get to the doctors on time, have food to put on their families, in the words of our fearless leader. What about that small town mayor and that coordinated interview that was set up last night with Charlie Gibson on ABC News, and again on Nightline last night, and again on whatever the ABC morning show is this morning, and again tonight on the ABC? What about Sarah Palin and her national security experience? After all, she is the governor of the state that's right next to Russia, just like Governor Bush, former Governor Bush, was governor of a great state right next to Mexico, and that was all the foreign policy experience he needed. What about national security experience, Governor?
When I asked John McCain about your national security credentials, he cited the fact that you have commanded the Alaska National Guard and that Alaska is close to Russia. Are those sufficient credentials?
But it is about reform of government, and it's about putting government back on the side of the people.
What?
And that has much to do with foreign policy and national security issues.
Hey, I'm sorry. What has something to do with national security and foreign policy? I'm just not clear on that. How it is that, what did you, can we get that answer again, please? I'm sorry.
When I asked John McCain about your national security credentials, he cited the fact that you have commanded the Alaska National Guard and that Alaska is close to Russia. Are those sufficient credentials?
But it is about reform of government.
And I don't understand that answer. We're talking national security. You're talking reform of government. Charlie Gibson was kind enough to ask the question again last night. And Sarah Palin answered, well, she's got national security experience because she's got energy experience. Really? And that was Charlie Gibson's retort.
National security is a whole lot more than energy.
It is, but I want you to not lose sight of the fact that energy is a foundation of national security.
Okay. Well, so is procuring loose nukes, which Barack Obama, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, did and reached across party aisles with Dick Lugar in Indiana to get it done. But we did learn one thing about Sarah Palin last night. She's not opposed to war with Russia.
Favor putting Georgia and Ukraine into NATO?
Ukraine, definitely, yes. Yes, and Georgia. Putin thinks otherwise. Obviously, he thinks otherwise.
And under the NATO treaty, wouldn't we then have to go to war if Russia went into Georgia?
Perhaps so. I mean, that is the agreement when you are a NATO ally, is if another country is attacked, you're going to be expected to be called upon and helped.
What about that Bush doctrine? You know the one, right, Governor Palin, that came out at the end of 2002 that was the basis and foundation for our argument and justifications for invading Iraq? You know that Bush doctrine? Do you know that Bush doctrine, Governor?
Do you agree with the Bush doctrine?
In what respect, Charlie?
Charlie?
The Bush, what do you interpret it to be?
His worldview?
No, the Bush doctrine, enunciated September 2002, before the Iraq War.
I believe that what President Bush has attempted to do is rid this world of Islamic extremism, terrorists who are hell-bent on destroying our nation. There have been blunders along the way, though. There have been mistakes made. And with new leadership, and that's the beauty of American elections, of course, and democracy, is with new leadership comes opportunity to do things better.
And, of course, by new leadership, somehow she means Senator John McCain. It was clear last night that the Bush doctrine was lost on her, even though Ron Suskind's 1% doctrine was made pretty clear what the Bush doctrine was. If there's a 1% chance that anything could happen, the Bush administration decided that they would act on it. So we entered into an endless occupation in Iraq. There was one thing that grated on me last night, and it's not her dialect, because I live in Wisconsin where we have a dialect very similar to Governor Palin's. It was just the way she condescended Charlie Gibson. It, I don't know what else it quite reminded me of.
Charlie.
It's from Charlie the Unicorn, something my nephew would know more about than I would, but it certainly reminded me of Governor Palin condescending and talking down to Charlie Gibson last night. You don't know what I know, and I don't know about the Bush Doctrine, but clearly the line of the night last night from presidential and vice presidential candidates alike came from Senator John McCain, who made clear in his forum on service at Columbia University that he knows what it takes to be senator, and he's in touch with the people.
It's easy for me to go to Washington and frankly, be somewhat divorced from the day-to-day challenges people have.
I'm sorry, what?
It's easy for me to go to Washington and frankly, be somewhat divorced from the day-to-day challenges people have.
That's what I thought you said. But clearly you are in touch with the struggles of the American people, right, Senator?
What about those people who really do have to work?
Our economy is broken. People are sitting around not worrying about volunteering, but staying in their homes, keeping their job, affording fill up their gas tank. We know that.
You do know that, you just don't feel it, because as a senator in Washington, D.C., sometimes you're a little divorced from our reality.
It's easy for me to go to Washington and frankly, be somewhat divorced from the day-to-day challenges people have.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought you thought. 866-303-2270. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today. Tom's going to try to broadcast from an undisclosed location next week. You won't want to miss it. Next, we've got Jobs for Justice. If we're talking about service, let's talk about employment. After all, that's what Senator McCain was alluding to. That's next. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today. You're listening to Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
After the hour, my name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman this afternoon. My guest is James Tiendwa. He is the executive director of Jobs with Justice in Chicago, online at chicagojwj.org. Welcome, James.
Oh, thank you very much.
I want to start by asking you about Jobs with Justice, how long it's been around, and what you do.
Jobs with Justice has been around since 1987. Basically, we bring community organizations and religious groups and students to fight together to support workers who want to organize. Basically, we challenge employers who don't think that workers have a right to organize. It's a very basic fundamental of democracy that workers be able to harness their collective power and negotiate the terms of their employment. And right now, the climate is very hostile to workers in the United States, and we're working to change that.
I spoke to a number of local labor leaders in my community in Madison, Wisconsin, on Labor Day last week, James, and the response was this has been a 30-year downhill spiral or downward spiral for organized labor in this country, and the one thing that can start turning this around is the Employee Free Choice Act.
Yes, absolutely. The Employee Free Choice Act is going to loosen the noose that's been around the necks of workers for decades now. What it does basically is that, with a simple card check, a majority of workers can just join a union. You know, no questions asked. Sign that card, and if a majority agree, they join a union. But it also imposes heavy penalties on employers who are frustrating the right of workers to organize, who are violating the law. Right now, it's the penalties are so negligible, they're just another cost of doing business. And we want to stop that. We want to impose, we want to exact a price on employers who violate this basic right.
It's not really a penalty if the price you have to pay is cheaper than what it would cost to actually have an organized employees in your workplace, isn't it?
That's right. We hope it'll have the effect of a penalty.
James Tiendwa, the executive director of Chicago's Jobs with Justice, online at chicagojwj.org. I want to ask you about the progressive agenda. Now, what does organized labor do to help create, shape, and promote the progressive agenda in this country, James?
Well, I think historically, if you look at labor unions across the world, their role has always gone beyond collective bargaining, that they, in fact, are a vehicle upon which so many different causes can ride. I mean, labor union students, you know, side by side with the civil rights movement, they're part of the women's rights movement. Right now, they're involved in the rights of immigrants. This is the only institution probably in this country and in most of in many countries where they have labor, probably the only institution that's capable of driving a broad agenda that includes many, many causes. And so we want to get back to that. Labor unions, for all intents and purposes, you know, both financially and in terms of infrastructure, have that capability.
James Tindwa, you pointed out to me that one thing absent from these national presidential debates or discussions is the issue of immigration, something that Senator McCain had spearheaded just not so much as a year ago, but we don't hear word boot about now. I want to know, from your perspective and the perspective of organized labor, how important is it to come up with some real immigration reform, and what should that real immigration reform look like?
Well, it's very important. I think, first of all, let's be clear. Most Americans are very teachable on the question of immigration. 58% of Americans think that legalization ought to be done, that people have been here for years, who have contributed to this economy.
What's that percentage, James?
58%.
Jeez.
So, but you wouldn't know that from the echo chamber from the right.
Yeah.
And so part of what's going on is that we accept the premise that corporations have every right to go to, you know, far-flung places in the world to maximize profits. But we reject the notion that a worker could make the same decision to go to another country to increase their earnings. So there's this sort of this contradiction. But we're also, I think, that a lot of members of Congress who are passing and who are voting for trade deals like NAFTA have not been held accountable. So we want to really make a shift from the workers who cross the borders and to people who actually pass these laws, to structures and forces that are creating conditions in the global South that are causing people to leave their own countries in search of a better life.
James Tindwa, we have seen the organization of multinational corporations, and I want to know from you why we are not organizing labor on a global scale.
Well, a lot of labor unions right now, including the Service Employees International, are in places like Malawi. They're organizing security guards. So there's a kind of a realization, I think, among labor union leaders that the fight for worker justice in the United States cannot take place outside of this general context in which wages and standards have to start going up in the global South.
Right.
So there's a reaching out. Jobs with Justice has an organizer, for example, in Delhi. We're working with the New Trade Union Initiative of India to try to figure out, for example, how to organize the factories that make, you know, products for Walmart and some of these other retailers, you know, in Asia, for example. So there has to be, a wage floor in Asia where workers are making a living wage.
James Tindwa from Chicago Jobs with Justice, online at chicagojwj.org. Lee Rayburn sitting in for Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Lee Rayburn sitting in for Tom Hartman today, 866-303-2270. We've been talking about the service forum with the presidential candidates last night, the first interview for the Republican vice presidential candidate, Governor Sarah Palin, on ABC last night. The first interview with her without a teleprompter, and here we are, what, 7 weeks away from the election? We've also been covering the story this morning of John McCain, or this afternoon, of John McCain sending absentee ballots to Barack Obama supporters and asking the question, why do you think that would be? 866-303-2270. We'll start with your calls in Orlando, Florida, where Willie's hanging on. Willie, you're on Air America Radio.
Hey, this is Louie Smith. I loved your last caller, the Jobs for Justice gentleman. I've worked with them in a lot of organizing campaigns, not him directly, but that group. And I am a vice president of a Communication Workers of America Local 3108. We represent about 2,000 AT&T technicians. We have some other smaller companies to represent, but primarily AT&T techs, which I'm one of them. I'm actually servicing a cell site right now. And I've got to tell you something. I feel for my union brothers and sisters in the Houston area, which when you take the telecommunication and electrical workers, they will be the backbone of the recovery effort there to put that place back together.
Thank you, Willie. That is a great point.
And I just want to say that one of the lies, the outright lies I see on the TV and other media about the Employee Free Choice Act is that somehow there's this evildom out there that's going to take away your anonymity in an organizing campaign. Well, we've done the same thing for 50 years. The card check is the first step toward organizing. Then you have an election, which is where the companies send in their stooges to scare the piss out of people.
Hey, Willie, you want to hang on? Because I want to see if we can conference you with James in California. Now, James disagrees with the Employee Free Choice Act, and I'm dying to know why. So if we could bring James here. James, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, James, you're on Air America Radio with Willie in Florida. He likes the Employee Free Choice Act. You don't. Why not?
Well, it's not so much that I don't like it, but I have some reservations. I don't know if your other caller is familiar, for instance, with the teachers union in Puerto Rico right now and the labor unions in California that are going up against the SEIU national leadership. Basically, I think there's a stipulation in the Free Choice Act which states that a union would have to be subject for at least a year to a contract decision decided upon by an arbitration board, basically administered through the National Labor Relations Board. So correct me if I'm wrong.
Willie, let's turn it over
well,
to you.
Well, let me make a couple of points. First of all, he's not incorrect. I mean, what we haven't had is a National Labor Relations Board, which today it's all, you know, supposedly Republican appointees, so I'll take what I can get. The point is that we've never had the companies that are militantly anti-organized labor, and this is the right for you to have some kind of negotiating power, just like that CEO negotiates with the board. I want to have a small amount of negotiation ability with the company I work for. It's only
fair. Yeah, I agree, because I went through that myself. We had like 75% of people, and then over the next few months, they brought all the employees into these little closed meetings where they harangued them with all these scary news stories, you know, misinformation and stuff.
Let me step in here, James and Willie, and say, you know, the scary news stories for me are the foreclosures that we're seeing right now, are the stagnant wages, the loss of health care, the issues that organized labor traditionally brought to the table to make sure that anybody working 40 hours a week would have guaranteed.
And I agree with your other guest. Right now, the labor movement is coming together internationally like never before. I think we did have kind of an adversarial relationship, we're going against Chinese workers or we're going against Mexican workers.
Right.
And now I think we're looking at it as, no, it's the workers against the one world order, George Bush.
That means we've got to take a lot of leadership from them, though, because a lot of those unions down there are really strong and they're doing things that are just unthinkable here in the United States.
I tell you what, James, if it comes to strong leadership elsewhere or weak leadership here at home, I'll take the strong leadership elsewhere.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm sorry I didn't get the caller's name in California. He doesn't sound like he's really that anti-union,
skeptical, I think. Right, James?
I'm not anti-anything. I just want, you know, to get the strongest possible thing that we could possibly get.
Oh, I appreciate it.
The Employee Free Choice Act, I'll take it.
Listen, James in California, Willie in Florida, I want to thank you both for the calls. I also want to move on here and take some other calls as we get them in. We've got another guest coming up, and I want to remind specifically Willie in Orlando, stick around for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in the next hour, talking about organizing farm workers in Florida there. We'll see what happens. And to be honest, I don't know enough about the Employee Free Choice Act other than to know that right now what we need as workers is to organize, because the weight of the burdens, economic burdens of this country are not falling on the CEOs. They're not falling on the shareholders who are getting all the tax breaks from their capital gains and their dividends. No, it's falling squarely on those of us who used to work 40 hours a week for the living, but now we're working 60 hours a week and you can barely call it a living. You know what I'm saying. Let's go to Fred in San Francisco. Good afternoon, Fred. You're on Air America Radio.
How you doing?
Good, sir.
I have a suggestion that can maybe help the Democrats win this election.
I'm all ears.
All right, here we go. Why doesn't Howard Dean or Barack Obama hold a news conference? And at the news conference, you'll have probably 50 to 100 reporters. Challenge the media to vet Sarah Palin. Now, listen to the rest of this. That would be on the 6 o'clock news, wouldn't it? That would be a story.
Oh, yeah.
Then the media would run over to McCain and go, Barack Obama or Howard Dean has challenged you to let Sarah Palin off her leash. What do you think about that, Mr. McCain? And Mr. McCain goes, get lost. We're not letting her do it. Now, you got another story. So you, for low-information voters out there, all they watch is the news, probably, you know, like the 5:30 news, and that's where they get their news. They get little snippets and lies. He's been lying every day about her record. If we held a news conference, Barack or Howard Dean, and challenged the media, that's a story. That goes in the 6 o'clock news.
I agree.
Then the McCain response, when he says no, that goes in the 6 o'clock news. So the public knows that they're hiding her because she can't handle it.
Fred, are you saying that last night was not a vetting by Charlie Gibson on ABC?
Come on. You know what a news you've seen news conferences.
I have covered news conferences in the past, and no news conference I ever attended was so heavily edited as that ABC interview with Sarah Palin last night.
So they understand if Sarah Palin gets in front of a news conference of 30 or 40 or 50 national reporters, she will fold up. She will not be able to handle a question and a follow-up and a follow-up, and her record's so shady. So why doesn't the Democratic Party or somebody – I've called the DNC every day. I'm emailing Obama. Why don't you have a news conference and tell the media, as Americans, we need to know this person?
Well, the crazy story for me, and thanks for the call, Fred, is that the only real media outlet that's vetting Sarah Palin right now is the National Enquirer, of all things. And I'm going to leave that to the National Enquirer to tell you what they've uncovered, because this is Air America Radio. And I was a little skeptical when the stories came out about John Edwards in the National Enquirer, and those bore out to be true. Now, the questions being raised by the National Enquirer about Sarah Palin's family and what they are into up in Alaska, you need to check out for yourself, because I did not buy the John Edwards story until John Edwards told me it was true. I will keep the same sort of skepticism for the National Enquirer, but they're the only ones digging in the dirt here. You got to wonder about everybody else. Bill in Detroit, good afternoon. You're on Air America Radio.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I was wondering about the Barack Obama's position on H-1B visas in terms of it seems to me that the system is being abused.
What are the H-1B visas?
Okay, basically it's like a guest worker program for, supposedly the whole premise of it is to bring in people that have skills that just aren't possessed by Americans.
And in Detroit, why does this concern you in Detroit?
I beg your pardon?
Why does this concern you up in Detroit?
Okay, well, basically, it's next to impossible to get a decent computer job. I've got 20 years of computer experience, but the way they set up the job requirements and so forth make it just almost impossible for somebody. End up bringing in a lot of workers from India.
And Bill, what you're seeing, to be frank about it, is that your job's being insourced right now with these H-1B visas.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm driving a cab. I've got over 20 years computer experience.
Jeez.
I'm driving a cab and driving around people who come in.
I do not know where Barack Obama stands on the H-1B visas, and as we covered with James Tiendwa from Jobs with Justice in Chicago earlier, you know, the whole position here of these candidates on immigration has not been raised at all. And it's something that the media should be asking these candidates about. And if I had my hands on one of these candidates, you better believe I'd be asking them about what about all the outsourcing of jobs. Barack Obama's made clear he wants to end tax breaks for corporations that outsource your work. But what about insourcing? Because that is a problem, both illegal insourcing and legal insourcing through the H-1B visa. And I have not heard where the candidates stand on these positions, and it would be interesting to find out if you know. 866-303-2270. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today, broadcasting from the Air America affiliate in Madison, Wisconsin, the Mike 92.1. When we continue, Christina Wilford joins us, the executive director of the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center. If you want to know more about the John McCain absentee ballot strategy being sent to likely Barack Obama voters, stay tuned to the last hour of the Tom Hartman program when Brad Friedman from bradlog.com tells us what's next to protect our democracy and our vote right here on Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman program.
At 11 minutes to the top of the hour, my name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman. A previous caller had asked where the presidential candidates stand on the H-1B visas, basic insourcing of tech work in our country. The Phoenix Business Journal points out that John McCain supports removing the cap permanently on H-1B visas and just opening the floodgates for our computer programmer who's driving cab in Detroit. Obama at the same time is calling for a temporary increase in the H-1B visas, but also more legal immigration and as well an opportunity for students who study here to have an easier path towards citizenship in the United States. That's where the candidates stand. Joining us now is Christina Wilfor. She is the executive director of the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center online at ballot.org. She's one of the country's leading experts on state policy and politics, spent 10 years working on 35 state capitals and in dozens of ballot initiatives across the country. Welcome, Christina.
Hi.
I want to start by asking you what I have seen with ballot initiatives over the last couple of years, Christina, is simple, that conservatives have used them, and specifically the fear of homosexuality, to use the ballot initiatives as a way to drive the vote on Election Day.
They have, but a lot of those ideas are running dry. I mean, if you look at where gay marriage, which was their game plan in 2004, let's distract from the real issues, mm-hmm. let's try to steal the election by putting this divisive issue that was a non-issue. You know, they basically did an entire strategy on making gay marriage super duper illegal in these states.
Extra illegal.
Already illegal there, but, you know, got to give them credit for that. And then they try to roll that out again in 2008, where we have California on the ballot and Florida and Arizona, the only state we actually beat this back again, and 2006 is back at the ballot, but it's just not going to work. You have Matthew Dowd saying, literally, these ballot measures aren't going to work. This issue is a non-issue in voters' minds. It's not the turnout vehicle that it was in 2006.
Well, then, Christina,
right?
Let me ask you how we turn the tables then and use ballot initiatives as a way not just to further the progressive movement, but also in the same vein that conservatives used it to make sure that progressives who may not see or may miss the idea of a choice between candidates at the polls will still make it to the polls on Election Day.
Absolutely, and we're doing exactly that. Mm-hmm. Especially you saw a real sea change in the midterm elections with the six minimum wage initiatives where voters came out to vote, voting for those, and it was particularly appealing to low propensity voters and other Democrat-leaning voters, low-income voters, who made a difference in elections like Claire McCaskill in Missouri and John Tester in Montana where that was on the ballot. And so we see traces of that into 2008. You know, what's important to look at when you look at the landscape this year is that the ballot measures that will really impact the election are the ones that are about real solutions and real problems, not the divisive gimmicks on the other side. So,
well, then let me ask you this. Christina Wilfor, the executive director of the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center online at ballot.org, the number one crisis facing this country today in terms of domestic family problems happens to be health care, almost on everybody's list. It's at the very top, because if you have it, you're one sickness away from losing it. If you have pre-existing conditions, well, those conditions aren't covered. And with a John McCain presidency, you'd see for the first time ever taxes on employer-based health care, which would put a chilling effect on employers offering health care to their employees. So how do we begin to deal with a health care crisis using the ballot initiative?
Well, I think we proved that we can pass real health care reforms in red states that have a populist appeal towards these issues. So take Montana, my beloved home state, for example. So they have a kids' health care measure on the ballot. Now, you may have remembered that one of the last bills that the Congress failed to really act on and actually was vetoed, you know, by Bush was the children's health care measure, the S-CHIP expansion.
Right.
And so you have Baucus, Senator Baucus, you know, not a wildly progressive man, but Senator Baucus, who's an important Democratic senator for that state, going around saying, look, if we pass children's health care and we expand children's health care in Montana and prove that we can do this in a red state, that lays the groundwork for being able to actually move on these federally. So there's a real relationship between these ballot measures and what happens in the state and how it influences a federal national agenda that people sometimes fail to make the connections between.
How does the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center work in terms of developing a message, creating a campaign, coordinating the ballot language, and then drafting efforts to get people to the polls on Election Day? How does that process work for you, Christina Wilfor?
Well, as you probably know as well as I, the smartest ideas aren't here in Washington, D.C., inside the Beltway where I'm sitting. I'm at K Street. But
oh, wow.
There, we're the new K Street. There's a progressive hub of organizations here. But it's really the innovation, the leaders in the state, the grassroots activists who are coming up with these ideas. Often, you know, they need a little help and structure, and that's where we come in and providing some of the strategy and campaign resources, and really making sure too that what they're doing in one state is connected to another. And how do we, you know, not just reinvent the wheel over and over, but how do we get smarter about using these as vehicles and smarter about winning campaigns? And that's what we help them do.
Christina Wilfor from the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center online at ballot.org. What about the right's use of fraud to try to qualify their initiatives? How does this work, or not work for that matter?
It's remarkable. I was just talking to my communications director about this, how ironic it is, and I think we're going to continue to see this, voter fraud.
Yep.
You know, and they're setting it up. I mean, this is their, you
Christina,
know,
Christina, we did an hour on this yesterday, and what we're seeing, and this is the facts now, John McCain has sent out, in Ohio alone, 1 million absentee ballots to likely Barack Obama voters. Absentee ballot applications. And those absentee ballot applications are not the standard Ohio form. In fact, they include another box, which is not checked, they're dropping people from the voter rolls right now in Ohio. When we took calls on this yesterday, we had an hour's worth of people in every purple state in the union calling in saying that John McCain had sent them an absentee ballot application, and they were afraid. There were some whose city clerk's address or their local clerk's addresses were wrong, where it would have been sent to the wrong clerk. Something strange is brewing, because why would John McCain be asking Barack Obama voters if they want an absentee ballot application?
Same in Michigan. If your house has been foreclosed,
yes,
you're saying those voters. It's tragic. Now, if we really want to look at fraud,
yes,
the fraud is being perpetrated by folks like Ward Connerly, who's trying to qualify the affirmative action bans, an unnecessary divisive measure meant to influence the presidential election. He failed to get on the ballot in Oklahoma and Missouri and Arizona. He is on the ballot in Colorado and Nebraska, but there's fraud in the signatures in Nebraska. So, you know, that's where the real issue is. Here's this guy going around, and he joins many other right-wing cronies who are dependent upon using illegal signature gatherers and really trying to get these ballots on by any means necessary.
Christina, wait a minute. We've got 30 seconds left, but what you're telling me is that they are claiming voter fraud while at the same time perpetrating election fraud.
Exactly. And voters aren't buying it in some states, and that's what's important. And, you know, I know the framework is change, and McCain trying to co-opt change. But if change to them is divisive ballot measures, which if they clearly are behind in many of these states, voters aren't going to buy it. That's not going to work.
I do believe the phrase is, that's not change we can believe in. Christina Wilfor, Executive Director of the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center. Find out more online at ballot.org. What you can do for health care, anything else that is a priority in your progressive community, ballot.org. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
Lee Rayburn sitting in for Tom Hartman today at 866-303-2270. When we continue, we'll take a look at the latest from the candidate forum last night on service. What did John McCain have to say? He's a little out of touch. It's Lee Rayburn. This is Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
From the Air America affiliate in Madison, Wisconsin, my name is Lee Rayburn. Thank you for having me today. Sitting in for Tom Hartman, who is going to try to broadcast from an undisclosed location next week. Don't miss a minute. Well, we've got a number of things to cover here today, and if you are tuning in because of the story we broke yesterday here on the Tom Hartman Program about John McCain's campaign sending absentee ballot applications to likely Barack Obama voters and why that may be, stay tuned. In our next hour, we'll be joined by Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Listen, I spent all night last night taking your emails, responding to as many as I could, and if you didn't get a response, I apologize, because I really try to get back to everybody. But the response last night to the story we broke yesterday has been overwhelming. I've been in contact with my local chapter, the ACLU. It is the only thing I'm a member of, by the way. and as well as local journalists here in my community of Madison, Wisconsin. And as well, I reached out to Brad Friedman yesterday because I felt I was in a little over my head when we started to get the calls from every purple state in the union claiming that John McCain had sent them absentee ballot applications that were either overcomplicated, where the form was inaccurate, or the city clerk's address was misaddressed so it would go to the wrong city clerk's office. Now, we're somewhat insulated in my home state of Wisconsin from tactics like this and election fraud that we are seeing allegedly from the John McCain campaign, because we can still register at the polling place on election day. Can you? It's time to find out. Last night, we also got a chance to preview the presidential candidates, not in any sort of form of debate, but rather a quote-unquote forum, or so they call it. And it was clear that last night, one candidate was full of contradictions. Let's start with Senator John McCain, or as we like to call him, Mr. Not-Go-Along-To-Get-Along.
Do you think the length of your service
Mr.
in Washington gives you a unique understanding of the changes that need to be made? Help us understand how that is.
Well, first of all, you know, I wasn't elected Miss Congeniality again this year. And the fact is, I fought him and fought him and fought him. And we have achieved some reforms. We, with Russ Feingold, we achieved a landmark campaign finance reform bill. Wait. We did a number of other things. We enacted ethics and lobbying reform that wasn't nearly enough.
Huh.
I've fought against them, and there are allies there. We're not all the go-along-to-get-along crowd.
No, of course you're not the go-along-to-get-along crowd. You stood up with my senator, Russ Feingold, for the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform legislation, which you violated as a presidential candidate. And then what was the other one? Oh, yeah, the ethics reform. No, that was Barack Obama that authored the what Senator Feingold called the Cadillac of ethics reform. And he was somebody who bucked his own party to get it done in terms of leadership in the Democratic Party. He bucked them in order to get ethics reform passed. Not John McCain, who is not the go-along-to-get-along guy, but he may be a little divorced from reality.
It's easy for me to go to Washington and frankly, be somewhat divorced from the day-to-day challenges people have.
I certainly appreciate the fact that he was frank with us about the fact that he's a little divorced from our reality. You know, the struggle to make ends meet or so much as find a doctor or fill the gas tank. John McCain made clear last night he prefers private service over the public sort.
I think we've got to involve more businesses and industries that routinely provide goods and services rather than rely on the federal government to do it.
Don't rely on that federal government. It's stupid. Just a little bit later in his conversation, though, he made clear that it was the federal government where it's at, in terms of first responders, in terms of national emergencies. So I don't understand. How can you say you're not the go-along-to-get-along type in Washington, D.C., and then claim you're divorced from reality because you're a senator in Washington, D.C.? How can you claim that we should rely on private service and not the public sector for help in our time of need, and then say this?
There's a place called the Resurrection Baptist Church down in New Orleans. Thousands of volunteers from churches all over the country came and are still working in New Orleans as we speak. So the primary role is government.
Okay. The primary role is government. But the fact that there's still churches trying to clean up what the primary role of government is doing should be cleaning up in New Orleans. The fact that churches are still doing that to this day isn't a stunning indictment into our lack of service from our public sector, but rather a stunning accolade for our private sector helping out people in their time of need 3 years after Hurricane Katrina. Let's compare that to what Barack Obama says the role of government is in terms of service, for which this forum was based last night at Columbia University.
The fact is that we have to have government. When a hurricane strikes, as it did with Katrina, we have to have a FEMA that works, which, by the way, means that we should be encouraging young people, the best and the brightest, to get involved as civil servants, to pursue careers of public service. So we've got people who are trained in federal emergency management who are able to take on the job.
Amen. And more than that, making government not just work again, but making government something that people want to be a part of once again.
If it weren't for government, then we wouldn't have a Civil Rights Act. Mm. If it weren't for government, we would not have the interstate highway system. If it weren't for government, we would not have some of our parks and natural wilderness areas that are so precious to America. And so part of my job, I think, as president, is to make government cool again. and to say to young people.
Well, I would consider that a job well done, Senator. 866-303-2270. Let's go to the phones where Sylvia in Santa Fe is hanging on. Sylvia, you're on Air America Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to add New Mexico to that list. My gentleman friend received an absentee voter ballot enclosed with a John McCain pamphlet. And I called the city clerk, and they said that was a wrong application. They will send one out to me.
Really? But if they're sending out millions of wrong applications, that's not just a mistake, is it?
No. It's intentional, I'm sure.
And so do you have any indication or speculation, Sylvia, as to why?
He's an independent. He's registered independent.
Okay.
Not Obama.
Does he get mail from, like, the Nature Conservancy or National Organization of Women? What we're trying to figure out is what mailing list John McCain bought so he could cage or trap or intimidate these voters who he sent the absentee applications to.
We sign applications for different organizations,
mm-hmm.
you know, left-wing organizations, environmental organizations, ACLU.
Yeah, we're still trying to track this down. I don't know, and I'm a little frustrated because I got to tell you, Sylvia, I have not gotten my absentee application from John McCain yet.
What
mailing list am I missing?
I don't know.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We will add New Mexico to the list of states currently sending where John McCain's campaign is currently sending out absentee ballot applications. And the thing is, in every one of these that I've seen, and here's what you need to do. If you receive an absentee ballot application from John McCain's campaign, you need to keep the envelope it was mailed in, or you need to keep whatever it is that has the address for you on it. You need to keep the return envelope or whatever it is that has the address of the city clerk or the county clerk on it. You need to keep whatever literature is contained therein, because if we turn in enough of these, my understanding, and we'll talk to Brad Friedman from bradblog.com in the next hour about what needs to be done in this in these allegations of voter entrapment, voter intimidation, or voter caging, what needs to be done is for us to build an overabundance of evidence before we get close to November. I mean, we need to do it now. I'm just not sure how. And if you've got any suggestions, I'm all ears. 866-303-2270, because something stinks when the party that is famous for trying to intimidate, harass, and keep voters from getting to the polls or casting a ballot is the same party that is now sending out absentee ballot applications to their opponent's supporters. What the? We'll go with heck. Soul in Miami, you're on Air America Radio.
Hi. You know, I think everybody's interested in their own self-interest, and there is the Tax Policy Institute. You know, there's a lot of disinformation about what McCain's putting out about that we're going to get.
He'll raise your taxes.
Yeah, but if you go to the Tax Policy Institute, and everybody should Google it, go there, get the truth, because Obama wants to eliminate $50,000. In other words, if you make $50,000 or less as a senior citizen, you don't pay any income tax.
What about those of us that make $50,000 or less and aren't old enough to be senior citizens?
Then you still get a tax break.
Woohoo! Actually, I looked at, I did an analysis, and I make about $30,000 a year. I did an analysis, and I found that in John McCain's tax plan, I'll spend an extra $400 in taxes. Under Barack Obama's tax plan, I'll save an extra $400 in taxes. And part of that is because for the first time in U.S. history, a presidential candidate is proposing, actually George W. Bush proposed this but took it off the table as soon as he got a reaction to it. He wants to tax our employer-based health care for the first time ever. It would end up keeping employers from offering health care, and it would be an extra added tax for all of us.
Well, in this Tax Policy Institute, which is a non-bias, you can go to it, Google it, send it out to everybody you know. This way, the news industry and the information industry is owned by the corporations.
No.
Naturally. They don't want Obama to be president. They want McCain.
Well, so, when they take those 30-second ads from John McCain that say Barack Obama wants to raise your taxes, and then let that fly as if it were the truth, and then keep the issues confined to the 30-second commercials while they talk about the tabloid idolatry during their so-called news, you know something is afoot. Thank you for the call, and the truth about the tax policies between John McCain and Barack Obama are as simple as this. If you are not the richest 1% and you are not a corporation who does not pay any income taxes, under Barack Obama you're going to get a tax break. If you are the richest 1% and or you are a corporation who doesn't pay any income taxes or outsources your labor, you will see a tax increase. Sounds fair to me. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Minutes after the hour, my name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman this afternoon, and joining us now from an undisclosed location somewhere in some time, please welcome to his own show, Mr. Tom Hartman. Tom,
hey,
are you there?
How are you?
Oh, my
hey,
gosh.
Lee.
I am trying hard not to ruin your program.
The email feedback I'm getting is that you're doing a great job, so good to know that you're there and that everything's going well, and I'm down here in South America, and we'll just leave it at that. And we'll be doing a whole show Monday. I'm at the radio station that we're going to be doing the show Monday from, testing out the lines right now. I think it's going to be really very interesting for our listeners on Monday.
Have you broadcast from where are you again? Somewhere in
South America.
Have you broadcast from South America before?
No, I've broadcast from Europe and from Australia, as I recall, but never from South America. This is a first.
Well, what are you going to bring us on Monday, Tom?
It's just some interesting information. It's not so political, frankly. It's although in a way maybe it's very political. I don't want to get into it all right now. Lee,
yes,
you I'm assuming you saw Sarah Palin's interview.
Oh yeah,
I was talking with Louise this morning, my wife, and on the telephone, and she said that it struck her as, remember that beauty queen who went on and on about
Miss South Carolina.
Yeah, right. She said that in her mind she kind of came across like that. I'm wondering, you know, what your take on it was.
Well, here I'll give you a little snippet, and you tell me yours, Tom Hartman. This from ABC's Charlie Gibson with Governor Sarah Palin last night.
Do you agree with the Bush Doctrine?
In what respect, Charlie?
In other words, Bush, what does that mean?
What do you interpret it to be?
His worldview.
No, the Bush Doctrine, enunciated September 2002, before the Iraq War.
I believe that what President Bush has attempted to do is rid this world of Islamic extremism, terrorists who are hell-bent on destroying our nation. There have been...
There you have it, Tom, the Bush Doctrine.
She doesn't know what the Bush Doctrine is.
No idea. Or at least she didn't until Charlie Gibson had to explain it to her. And as well, she also said that we would invade Russia if they would not give back South Ossetia to Georgia.
You're kidding.
Well, certainly.
We've got 9,000 nuclear weapons pointed at us, and we're going to invade them?
Yeah, but we've got God on our side. Don't you get it, Tom?
This is the woman who's running to be Vice President of the United States.
Here, check this out.
Favor putting Georgia and Ukraine into NATO?
Ukraine, definitely, yes. Yes, and Georgia. Putin thinks otherwise. Obviously, he thinks otherwise.
And under the NATO treaty, wouldn't we then have to go to war if Russia went into Georgia?
Perhaps so. I mean, that is the agreement when you are a NATO ally, is if another country is attacked, you're going to be expected to be called upon and helped.
You heard him. You heard her yourself, Tom Hartman.
We may have to go to war with Russia.
Yeah, because they're members of NATO.
Maybe I'll just stay here.
And maybe I'll visit.
Yeah, really.
You're just going to have to write me a map.
Big enough for both of us, Lee.
Oh, jeez, Tom
Louise
Hartman.
And the cats.
The cats. You know, that's the one thing I worry about more than anything else is, what about my cat?
Right, yeah.
Democracy. And here's another story that we uncovered yesterday. I got some email on my local show about somebody who received an absentee ballot application from John McCain's campaign.
Yes.
And the absentee ballot application was actually the return address to the city clerk's address was wrong, incorrect. It was
right.
Wrong city
right.
clerk. We
I've
opened
got
up
a whole bunch of emails on those things in the last 24 hours, apparently, because you brought it up on the show yesterday. A lot of listeners are sending me emails saying that, you know, apparently what they're trying to do is get people to absentee vote, principally in Democratic areas, and they mail in the ballot to a phony address. They think they voted and they haven't.
Well, and I don't know what this means, Tom. We need you back in the United States, even if, you know, at your own peril to return, because I'm not sure what's going on here, but it certainly strikes me as strange that you have a presidential candidate sending out absentee ballot applications to his opponent's supporters.
Right. Right, with the wrong address. Something stinks really badly. It smells like Karl Rove. You know, Karl Rove says he's not officially an employee of the McCain campaign, but the fact of the matter is that Biden has said that if Obama and Biden are elected, they're gonna pursue prosecutions. In other words, Karl Rove's gonna go to prison. So he's, you know, even if they don't pay him, he's gonna do everything he can to help them win.
So, well, we've also heard from the McCain campaign that, yes, indeed, he is working with the McCain campaign while at the same time posing as a political analyst on Fox News. But how much of that posing has to do with trying to keep his ass out of jail?
Right. It all has to do with trying to keep his ass out of jail, as you said, yeah.
That's what I thought, Tom Hartman.
That's the bottom line. Lee Rayburn, you're doing a great job.
Well, I'm blushing on the radio now, Tom. You stay safe wherever you are. I can't wait to hear your broadcast on Monday live from South America. Hear what's going on down there. I've got a story coming up about Bolivia that just rattled my soul. We may be waging another proxy war down in Central America, South America, that is not making a dent in the mainstream media here.
Oh, man. And Bolivia, look at Google Halliburton as well.
Oh, no!
And Bechtel.
Oh, jeez. Tom Hartman, thank you so much. Stay safe, and we will listen to you Monday.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Lee, and thanks for having me on my show.
Lee Rayburn,
thanks for filling in for me. I truly appreciate it. Lee. You're doing a great job.
The honor is all mine. Lee Rayburn sitting in for Tom Hartman today. You're listening to Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
It's 34 minutes after the hour. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today, and our next guest is one of the co-founders of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers online at CIW-online.org. Now, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers is a community-based farm worker organization headquartered in Florida with over 4,000 members. They're working to modernize conditions for farm workers and promote fair treatment in accordance with national and international labor standards. Hey, good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Lee. How you doing?
I am good, but, you know, I hear stories, and I want to give a shout-out to Just Coffee here in Madison and Mike Moon, who pointed me to your work that you do on a daily basis on behalf of our farmers in Florida. And let's start with some of the successes of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers.
The successes? Well, I guess it depends on how you define success, in the sense that one of the most recent things that we were in the news about was a slavery case that ended in the conviction last week of several farm bosses for federal slavery charges.
Now, this was slavery that actually included wrought iron chains, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was one of the most brutal cases we've seen in the time that we've been doing this, and that's, you know, almost 20 years. Mm. Workers in this crew were locked inside U-Haul trucks at night. They were chained to posts in the sort of compound that this boss, where the boss and the family lived. He held them in debt, and actually, you know, they were beaten when they tried to escape. They had to kick their way out of a U-Haul truck at night in order to get out of the control of the boss and go to the police and denounce their employer.
Greg, where was this? Was this in Mexico? Was this in China? Where was this?
Three blocks from our office in Immokalee.
You're kidding. Florida.
In Immokalee, Florida, which is, you know, about 40 minutes from Naples, Florida, Fort Myers, Florida, on the coast, places a lot of people know.
Now, is this, do you suspect, an isolated incident? Is this just as bad as it gets, or are we going to find this elsewhere in our country?
Unfortunately, it's not an isolated incident. This is the seventh slavery case to come out of Florida's field since 1997.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and that, you know, we've been involved in six of those prosecutions, and that, you know, involving far more than 1,000 workers who have been liberated as a result of those cases. There's now 17, 18 employers who are behind bars presently today on slavery charges in Florida, and you know, it's not that it's the norm. it's the extreme, you know, and but the norm is a disaster, as Senator Sanders, Bernie Sanders said when he came down here, and that's the reality. The extreme is slavery, but the norm is just a level of exploitation that people really couldn't understand unless they were living and working here in Immokalee.
Greg Asbett, our guest, co-founder of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, online at ciw-online.org. And you've also taken on some of the big fast food restaurants and one as well, Greg.
Well, yeah, and the two are not unconnected. The two major campaigns that we fight every day, the anti-slavery work and the campaign for fair food, are very much intimately connected in the sense that slavery doesn't occur in a vacuum. It requires, you know, in a sort of across-the-board degraded labor environment with sub-poverty wages, no right to organize, no right to overtime pay, no job security, in order to be possible, in order to thrive. And, you know, those are the conditions that exist in Florida, and those conditions create a sort of unparalleled turnover in the field. You know, there's a constant flow of people through the fields because nobody wants to work in this job. I mean, you don't know anybody who says, I can't wait till I get that job picking tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know? there's no other job that people go from to the field. People go from the fields to every other job, but they don't go from other jobs to the field. And so when you have that situation and you're a crew leader whose job is, you know, you're a boss in the field, your job is to provide labor to these major corporate growers, then it's difficult to keep a crew, you know, working for you over time. And so some of the worst crew leaders resort to slavery. Now, our approach to eliminating slavery is not solely a case-by-case prosecution approach, because that would take forever and probably not be successful.
Right.
What we aim to do is to improve the floor conditions in the field, you know, to improve the sort of across-the-board exploitation in the field so that workers can get a fair wage and humane treatment. And, you know, our theory is pretty simple. If all workers are getting a fair wage and humane treatment, nobody will be held in slavery.
Yeah, but my tomatoes will be expensive.
But they won't. That's the magic of the campaign, because actually the workers who pick tomatoes get such a small percentage of the overall, the end price for the user, for the buyer, that you could double it, triple it, even quadruple it, and you'd have a hard time even seeing, you know, a penny increase at the other end.
Well, it'd be worth a penny for me, Greg, if we could end slavery in this country.
Yeah, it would.
It'd be worth, you know what? It would be worth $5 for me, $20. How do you put a price tag on still finding people in wrought iron chains in this country in this age?
Well, see, that's the thing. And the problem is, I think, you know, most people share your opinion. I think if you polled people, I think most people would say, you know, should our food be picked by people who are held against their will?
But in the same sentence or in the same breath, Greg Asbett, what we're seeing also is people who don't want to know where their food comes from, don't want to think about it while they're chomping it down, and don't want to try to figure out why it is they can get local food, while local food from their own backyard is more expensive than food from a half world away.
Right. And, you know, the other thing is most people, the information people get about their food comes through the marketing, you know, budgets of these major multi-billion-dollar fast food companies, you know, and what they emphasize is that the food is convenient, that it's, you know, tasty and cheap.
Cheap, yeah.
And they don't explain, of course they're not going to say, and these are the conditions in which it's cooked, you know, but that's our job. Actually,
well,
that's exactly our job.
It's amazing to me, Greg, that a union of 4,000 members can have such an incredible effect over, you know, working conditions for all of us to some degree across this country. I think of the artichoke farmers in Castroville, California, and Monterey. I think of some of the fruit farmers in the Inland Empire in California. And I wonder, to what degree do we need the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, not just in Florida, but across the country?
Yeah. Well, you know, it reminds me again of Senator Sanders. Sorry to keep going back.
No, that's all right. Hey, listen, we're on a show right here where Fridays is usually brunch with Bernie, so Bernie's here for a full hour.
Maybe I'll talk for him then. When he came down, you know, it was sort of like the canary in a coal mine. He knows a lot about labor, obviously.
Yep.
He spent his whole life involved in fighting for labor. When he came down here, he was shocked. It was the same day that this slavery case, you know, hit the news that he was here. And, you know, he spent some time in the community, went out to the fields, walked around in the morning when people tried to get the jobs in the morning out in the parking lot at 4 a.m. And he came out of it saying, you know, I talk about the race to the bottom in this country. This is the bottom. Immokalee is the bottom. And so that's why, you know, the senator from Vermont is interested in this lost little town in Florida.
What about the two senators from Florida?
Well, that's another story. the senator from Vermont doesn't necessarily have the same relationship with the agricultural industry that the senators from Florida do. But his theory is if you raise the bottom up, then all workers stand to benefit. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Greg Asbett, our guest, one of the co-founders of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers Online at CIW-online.org. Most important question I'll ask you today, Greg, is as a consumer, and what can I do? How do I empower myself, and how do I make sure that I'm not part of the problem in terms of seeing real slavery in this country today with real wrought iron chains and people being locked inside a U-Haul overnight until their next shift comes up?
Well, obviously the first and most important thing is inform yourself. You know, you've given our website a couple times, so if people are looking to learn more, they can definitely start at our website.
Well, you can give it out again.
Well, it's CIW-online.org, O-R-G. Yeah. And, you know, that's a way to be able to start understanding the history of your food, where your food comes from and who it's been touched by and how it gets from the field to the trucks to the, you know, down the highways to your table. And once you do that, you can't help but start to think differently about your food. And our campaign is asking consumers to demand of the companies that sell them food that those companies use their buying power, not to demand lower and lower prices for the tomatoes and everything else that they buy from here in Florida, but to actually demand higher and higher labor standards for the workers who pick those tomatoes and everything else here in Florida. And so, you know, with the buying power of a company like Walmart, for example, which has, you know, unimaginable negotiating power when it talks to its suppliers, that could either be used to continue pressing down wages and working conditions in their suppliers' operations, or to say if you want to sell to Walmart, you have to meet these conditions. You have to treat your workers humanely, and you have to pay a fair wage.
Do you remember, are you old enough, Greg, to remember the day when Walmart campaigned on Made in America and being America's store? And, boy, those days are long gone, aren't they?
Unfortunately, I am old enough to remember that. And also, I remember before there was Walmart. I mean, you know, nobody's...
Oh, you mean back in the days when there was a downtown in every community and across the country.
Exactly. These companies, one sort of accepts them as just being part of the landscape at this point, as, you know, sort of mountains that have been there forever. But
right.
That's not the case. You know, they, you know, McDonald's, Walmart, all these major corporations with massive, you know, Walmart has a third of $1 trillion in revenue every year. These companies, it's over the past 30, 40, 50 years that they've existed. And they've driven, in a lot of ways, they've driven the conditions in their suppliers down and down and down during that time. And it's time to reverse that. We can reverse it. That's what our campaign is doing. You know, and it's, of course, it's doing it in a small corner of the world, you know, for a small issue of workers who pick tomatoes.
Yeah, but admit it, it's having a global effect.
Well, hopefully, at least it's being, you know, sort of seen globally. And so workers in those other supply chains can realize that, you know, there is a way to make change.
Well, we've seen it at any number of fast food restaurants already. Greg Asbett, I want to thank you for continuing to force us as workers to compete towards the top and not compete for the bottom. And I want to remind folks that a great resource is online for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers at CIW-online.org. Greg, thank you so much, and we'll have to talk again, sir.
Thanks a lot.
It is a quarter to the top of the hour right now. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today. When we get back, you won't believe what's happening in Bolivia. Another coup, another proxy war. What is happening? The Center for Economic and Policy Research joins us next to give us the lowdown. I'm Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Minutes after the hour, Lee Rayburn sitting in for Tom Hartman this afternoon. And if you are tuning in today to hear more on the story that we broke yesterday here on the Tom Hartman Show about John McCain's campaign sending absentee ballot applications to likely Barack Obama voters. What that means and why, stay tuned. In the next hour, we'll be joined by Brad Friedman from bradblog.com to take a look at what this means. And we've seen 1 million of these absentee ballots now sent out in Ohio, applications for absentee ballots sent out in Ohio alone. About one third of the absentee ballot applications received at the Hamilton County Board of Elections in Ohio have now been ruled invalid because Senator John McCain's campaign printed a version of the form, the absentee ballot application form, with an extra unneeded box on it. Is it possible that they are using these absentee ballot applications in a number of different ways to disenfranchise voters? We will discuss this in the next hour. Stay tuned. Our next guest, however, is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. He has his doctorate in economics from the University of Michigan. He's a co-author of, with Dean Baker of Social Security, the Phony Crisis. He is also an expert on Bolivia. Mark Weisbrot joins us. Good afternoon, Mark.
Thanks. Good to be here.
What the heck is going on in Bolivia, and why the hell is the United States involved with it?
Well, there's kind of an insurrection going on. You know, the you have this opposition movement there. It's mostly white and upper income and funded by the big landowners, of course.
Mark, that sounds like the same opposition that Hugo Chavez faced in the 2002 bloodless coup.
Well, it actually is a very similar thing. You know, they had in Venezuela, the opposition there had kind of an insurrectionary strategy all the way at least through 2003, from 1999 to 2003, and then they started to participate in elections. And the in Bolivia, you know, they just had a referendum there, and 67% of the people voted to support to keep the president. And in fact, his support increased quite a bit, enormously, over the 2005 elections when he was first elected, even in these opposition provinces in the eastern lowlands. And so they've now, opposition groups have now taken to more violent forms of protest, including cutting off natural gas exports to Brazil, cutting off part of it at least, and, you know, riots and even some killings.
Mark Weisbrot from the Center for Economic and Policy Research online at CEPR.net. Why is it that Bolivian President Evo Morales has asked the U.S. ambassador to leave the country?
Well, he's doing that because they believe that the U.S. ambassador has actually been supportive of the opposition.
Is there anything to substantiate that, Mark?
Well, he has done some things. I mean, he's met with, for example, he's met with the opposition at particularly inopportune times, like, you know, just at a time when, you know, they were engaged in illegal actions, for example. And he's, you know, he's generally seen as sympathetic to the opposition. And I think more importantly, is that our government is funding with millions of dollars. They're funding opposition groups down there still.
Just to be clear here, we just had an election in Bolivia. The president, it was a recall referendum. The president was reelected with over two-thirds of the vote. And this was a democratically elected government that is now being challenged by an insurrection of largely the rich white folks in Bolivia with the support and funding of the U.S. government. Do I have that right, right, Mark?
That's absolutely right. Now,
jeez,
they don't openly support them in the sense of, you know, endorsing what they're doing, but they are funding a lot of groups. They won't tell who they are. So this is USAID. So we know that they're funding these groups. $89 million a year, actually, is the amount of their total funding.
Now, in Bolivia?
This is just in Bolivia, yeah.
Jeez.
It's an enormous amount of money relative to the Bolivian economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, some of this is public, but some of it is not. And a lot of it is not. And, you know, USAID is not a clandestine organization. So we in the United States should have also a right to know what our tax dollars are being used for. This isn't the CIA. And you know that they're funding opposition groups because it's a very polarized society. It's not the League of Women Voters. on it, you know.
Well, and going back to the parallel of the Venezuelan coup in 2002, we know that the U.S. at some level was involved. We know that there was a U.S. helicopter that escorted Hugo Chavez from the presidential palace, and we know this because there was a Canadian documentary crew filming the entire coup when it took place. Is Evo Morales in danger of being deposed in Bolivia?
Well, there's always a threat. I mean, I don't think he's going to be overthrown because, you know, you've got to remember he has the support of two-thirds of the country.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to happen. But it's very serious in terms of, you know, when you start to cut off gas to Brazil, Brazil gets half of its gas from natural gas from Bolivia, and the industrial heartland around Sao Paulo is especially dependent on it. And so, you know, Brazil stated just today or yesterday that they won't tolerate an interruption in the constitutional order. So Brazil has a big stake in this, not just Venezuela, also Argentina, which gets its natural gas from Bolivia. And so you do have, I think, one of the things that we have going for us now, those of us who, you know, favor democracy in the region as opposed to like 7 or 10 years ago, is that the norms have changed over the last decade, where it's not so easy for the United States to support a coup in any of these countries and get away with it.
Mark Weisbrot, what can we do about this? I know education is part of it because I have not heard this story outside of the Center for Economic and Policy Research online at cepr.net yet. What can we do to play a role in making sure that we support democracies and not try to subvert them?
Well, I think we should try to. Actually, I think there's some members of Congress right now that are sending a letter to the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, and asking her to make some statement that the United States does not support these insurrectionary attempts to overthrow the government in Bolivia.
Contact our congressperson, Mark.
Yeah, I think that would be good. And also to ask them to disclose these who they're funding, and believe me, this is our tax dollars.
Mark Weisbrot from the Center for Economic and Policy Research online at cepr.net. Thank you, sir. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
From the Air America affiliate in Madison, Wisconsin, my name is Lee Rayburn. Thank you for having me today. Thanks to Tom Hartman and everybody at Air America trying to hold down the fort. And yesterday on this show, we just opened up the phone lines with one single story about one absentee ballot application sent to one local listener here in Madison, Wisconsin. And all of a sudden, we got calls from coast to coast, mostly in purple states, of Barack Obama supporters receiving absentee ballot applications from the John McCain campaign. Here to try to explain it and figure out what's going on and why, Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. Good afternoon, Brad.
Hey, Lee. Great to be here. Thank you, sir.
I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to help me because I'm in over my head. We got the story yesterday, and then it just blew up in my face. And I've got to tell you, I don't know what to think about this. Here we have a seemingly innocuous ballot, absentee ballot application being sent to from John McCain to Barack Obama supporters.
Well, I'll tell you, first off, hats off to your listeners for making noise about this, for seeing something they were concerned about, contacting the media. I know a lot of them contacted their election directors and their local media and so forth. Thank you for doing that, listeners. We need some more vigilance out there, and we need people like you on the ground who are making noise because the media is still not appropriately covering these things. That said, I think I've got some good news, at least as far as we've been able to learn while looking into this. And after you contacted me and sent some of those absentee ballot request forms that the McCain camp had been sending out, and I had received some the previous day from places like North Carolina as well, people who were concerned. We started looking into it, and I want to give credit to John Gideon at VotersUnite.org, who helped. I think we've got some, we'll call it good news here,
okay,
which is that there doesn't seem at this time to be anything out of sorts about those absentee ballot request forms that they're sending out. It seems to be rather aggressive, you know, get out the vote campaigns. And in fact, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party really like those vote by mail, those absentee ballots, for a number of reasons. It makes it a lot easier for them to track things and figure out where to put their money. I'm not crazy about vote by mail because they are counted by the same machines that fail on election day. But the difference is they're even harder to track, and you know they don't even get a lot of times. You drop them in the post office, you don't even know if it's going to get to where it's going to get, if,
right,
whether it's counted at all. So I have a concern about that. But that said, it doesn't seem to be out and out any nefarious effort on the part of McCain here. We looked at those addresses that were on the postcards. And they were, in fact, at least the ones that we've been able to track down so far, they are the correct addresses. If it says, you know, town clerk of such and such county, we compared the address to that on the website of those town clerks, you know, where they tell you to send your absentee ballot request forms. And, in fact, the addresses are matching up. So I think in this case, at least, we're okay.
Two stories here, Brad Freeman, that I want to bring to your attention. The Cincinnati Inquirer yesterday reports that about one-third of the absentee ballot applications received in Hamilton County, Ohio, have been ruled invalid because Senator John McCain's campaign printed a version of the absentee request ballot request form with an extra unneeded box in it. And in an interpretation of Ohio law, the Secretary of State there says many of the McCain forms were not completed properly, therefore their application did not go through. 750 absentee ballot requests in Hamilton County alone have been invalidated because of John McCain's absentee ballot request form, and the McCain campaign reports that it was a mistake and that they've mailed out 1 million of these. My boss, Brad, got one of these applications in the mail, and he also printed out a local absentee application ballot application. And the thing is that these ones that McCain are sending out look like a tax form. They look like your 1040. And the absentee application process, in at least in my city of Madison, is just one sheet that says what ballot do you want, what's your name, what's your residence address, and what's your mailing address, and that's it.
Well, look, listen, there is a lot to be worried about, and the Republicans are doing a lot of dirty tricks that are underway all over the country. You know, in Michigan, they're getting lists of people whose homes were foreclosed, and they're going to challenge them at the polls. Down in Florida, they're doing this ID matching that if, for example, if I'm registered as Brad Freedman, but my driver's license says Bradley Freedman, I may not be able to vote down in Florida. And they're doing this, frankly, all over the country right now. And these are ugly, dirty tricks. In Virginia, they're sending mailers out to students saying if you vote at Virginia Tech rather than at in your home state, then you've got to declare your independence from your parents. You might lose your scholarship. They can't claim you as a dependent. So don't get me wrong. There's a lot of dirty tricks going on out here by the Republicans. Their only chance here is to keep people from voting. That said, the Ohio mailer was a case where they put a box on there that says
eligible electorate or something like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people didn't know to check it. And by law now, Jennifer Brunner has to look at those and sees those legally as someone saying they are not eligible to vote. So she has, it was a close call. Her ruling was she can't count those registration forms, largely from Republicans, by the way, because they sent out about a million mailers to Republicans in Ohio and probably some Democrats as well. But what she is doing is saying that the county must now send out mailers within 48 hours to all of those people who sent those in. And you can ask your boss if he gets one, if in fact he had sent one in.
Right.
But following up on it and saying, hey, we received your absentee request mailer. However, it was incomplete, and therefore you need to fill out this information. They've got to do that within the counties have been ordered to do that now on their own dime within the next 2 days. So hopefully that will get cleared up. So, you know, it's tough because there's a lot of stuff going on. We haven't even, you know, talked about how bad the machines are and those problems. But, you know, with that and with all the dirty tricks and the purges and the vote caging that is going on, we've got to be real careful and real sober here in trying to figure out which is the real bad guy stuff and which just looks like the bad guy stuff. And it, and admittedly, it's a tough call. And that's why I say to your listeners, hey, better to make noise than not. If you're not sure, make noise. Contact your county registrar, your secretary of state, your media, all of the above, because, you know, a lot of the times the bad guys are the county registrar. So, you know, get what you can from the registrar, but also check with the secretary of state to make sure, and check with the media to make sure. Make noise. Don't sit back and wait for, my God, the corporate media.
Well, and you can't have an election fraud story after an election. It doesn't work that way, and we've seen that two presidential elections in a row. Brad Friedman, my guest from bradblog.com. Two questions. If people receive, if likely Obama voters receive absentee ballot applications from John McCain, what should they do? And the second one, question, Brad, maybe more importantly, how can we confirm that we are on the voter roll so we can vote on election day?
Well, a couple of things. I'll take the second one first. Call your county and or your state to assure that you are still on the voter rolls, even if you voted in this most recent primary, because voting rolls are getting purged and or now taken over by the same private voting machine companies who did such a crappy job with the voting machines themselves. They're now being rewarded by owning the voter registration rolls, again, with no public oversight.
Well, and we're seeing this here in my home state right now, Brad Friedman, with our Republican Attorney General. The Republican Party of Wisconsin filed a lawsuit earlier this week that would have dropped a million voters off our voter rolls because our Help America Vote Act voter registration list is not in compliance yet. And after that lawsuit was dropped, that was filed by the Wisconsin GOP, then our Republican State Attorney General filed the same lawsuit threatening, and this is a state that John Kerry won by just over 11,000 votes, they're threatening to drop a million people off the voter rolls here.
They're not threatening. They're trying to make it happen. And that's what I'm talking about. There is some very serious stuff going on. This is going to be uglier, I predict, than anyone will even guess this November. And so, yes, go to votersunite.org. And on the right side, there's a nice button that says, are you registered? And it will tell you in all 50 states how to find out. It'll either give you the phone number of the Secretary of State's office, or it will give you a link to the online facility. A lot of these have online utilities where you can punch it in and find out if, in fact, you are still registered. Check it once, check it twice, check it three times if you can between here and November to make sure you don't get a surprise once you get to those polls in November.
Now, Brad Friedman, if I got a John McCain absentee ballot application, what should I do?
You know, if you want to vote absentee, go to the website, go to your county website, and do their procedure so there'll be no mistake. They'll tell you how it's supposed to be done. Don't count on John McCain's mailer to get it right. Go do it yourself. And that said, unless you really need to vote absentee, I recommend you don't. I recommend you vote on election day at the polling place on paper. And if your only choice is to vote on a touchscreen machine, whether it has a a paper trail or not, it doesn't matter. A touchscreen vote can never be verified as accurate. So if your only choice is to use a touchscreen, then you can consider absentee balloting, but find out if you can deliver your absentee ballot on election day to the polls. In other states like California and in Ohio, I just interviewed the Secretary of State Brunner last week. Every voter in Ohio who wants a paper ballot can have a paper ballot, even if it says, even if you go to your polls and your only choice is touchscreen. Tell the poll worker, I want to vote on a paper ballot, and you can get it. So learn the law in your state and make sure that you vote on paper and hopefully on election day. That's the most important thing you can do. That and be a poll worker and a poll watcher and help out with the mess that may likely occur this November.
VotersUnite.org, our guest Brad Friedman, my favorite patriot, can be found anytime online at bradblog.com. Thank you, Brad, so much for your work on this. I very much appreciate it.
One last point I want to throw in, Lee.
Quickly.
Go to standingforvoters.org. Make your candidates take the no concessions pledge.
StandingForVoters.org.
That's StandingForVoters.org. Brad Friedman, our guest, at BradBlog.com. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today. When we continue, we'll talk to the media. This is Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
After the hour, my name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today on the Air America Show. Tom will be broadcasting from somewhere in South America on Monday. Don't miss it. Our next guest serves as my local community radio's operations coordinator, WORT in Madison, Wisconsin, our community radio station online from anywhere at WORT-FM.org. Our guest, Norm Stockwell, has been working at the station in news and music since 1983. He recently covered both conventions for WORT and other community radio stations across the country. Hey, Norm.
Hi, Lee. Glad to be with you.
Hey, listen, I want to ask you about the, you've been a member of the media almost as long as I've been alive, Norm, and I want to ask you why it is we've covered a number of stories today that seem to be important to me. Real stories of real slavery, including wrought iron chains in Immokalee, Florida. The story of Bolivia's democracy being subverted allegedly by some, at least, U.S. aid funding. And the story of voter caging that is taking place in purple states across the country. Where is this story, Norm?
Well, I mean, I think that the story of the conventions is an important piece of what's going on around the country and around the world. The conventions this year were, you know, sort of showpieces for the parties to kind of talk about what it was they were planning to do, and I think we saw definitely a different agenda at the Democratic National Convention in Denver than we did at the Republican National Convention in St. Paul, although, frankly, outside in the streets there was a lot of similarities.
And not just in protests, but also in the corporate-financed parties as well. Is that right, Norm?
Yeah, I mean, I think the corporate presence at the conventions has been increasing over the last generation, and certainly the last several presidential conventions that I've covered, we've seen a lot of corporate sponsorship. This year, as much as any, you saw huge corporations that were putting a lot of money into both conventions. The telephone giant Quest, for instance, provided the lanyards that everybody's name badge was on, and they were that was for both conventions. So you had a name badge in Denver that was hanging on a lanyard that said Quest Communications Democratic Convention, and then you had one in St. Paul that said Quest Communications Republican Convention. So they're playing both sides of the fence, if you will.
Well, what does that suggest about our two-party system then? That is there something else out there politically that is an alternative to the Blue Dog Democrats being wined and dined by AT&T after they helped them rewrite the FISA laws for retroactive and proactive immunity? I have to assume, Norm, that AT&T was probably wining and dining Republicans in St. Paul a couple weeks ago too.
Yes, very much so. There was a strong AT&T presence at both conventions as well, and they provided parties and so on and so forth. You know, I mean, I think that there are certainly alternatives out there to the corporate way that politics is run in this country. We didn't see it at those two national party conventions. You did see, however, presence in both cities of people in the streets who were talking about alternatives, and you saw presence of the Green Party candidates and the independent candidates like Ralph Nader talking about alternatives. So it's out there, but it's not making it into the mainstream, and you're not going to see it on Fox or CNN or the networks.
You mean World News Corporation, AOL, Time Warner, Disney, General Electric.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that we can do, I mean, as media consumers, to find the story about what's going on, not in front of the cameras, but rather with corporations and behind the scenes and with protests out in the streets? Where is that news?
Well, you know, there's a lot of independent media out there covering things, and the independent media networks like Indie Media, like Pacifica Radio, like Democracy Now, that are bringing alternatives, bringing the voices from the streets to listeners and viewers around the country. There's also the blogosphere, and one thing that people need to realize is that, you know, you need to go approach any media, not just the mainstream corporate media, but any media with...
Norm Stockwell from WRT online at WRT-FM.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Apologize for cutting off Norm Stockwell in our last segment. I had Norm on because he is the real journalist, the real deal, and you'll find his work online at WORT-FM.org. Lee Rayburn sitting in for Tom Hartman today at 34 minutes after the hour. 866-303-2270. Take some of these calls. I know you've been hanging on the line a long time. I very much appreciate it. Mike in Canton, Michigan, you're on Air America Radio. Good afternoon.
How you doing, Lee? I really appreciate the show today. Unbelievable. I'm a Michigan voter, Obama supporter. I received the McCain piece with absentee voting. And it was not uniform with the Michigan absentee voter application. I have no idea if they accepted it or not. I'm already a registered voter, so I didn't send it in. But,
okay.
Okay. And another thing is Jobs for Justice actually had a rally today at the McCain headquarters. Around where I live, because I know some of your guests today talked about it, but a county Republican Party official said that they were going to be challenging voters based on the foreclosure list.
And, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, so that was interesting. I didn't get a chance to go there. I was in class. But
Jobs for Justice was out there, huh?
Yeah, and interestingly enough, McCain's headquarters are in Trot and Trot law firm building, which is the number one foreclosure attorney. They represent creditors here.
Way to put the pieces together, Mike.
Yeah, really interestingly enough. So, that hopefully gets some media out of that. But the reason I called was about the Palin interview yesterday. I don't know. I think it was after the clip that you played where she stumbled over the Bush doctrine, but I think he asked her about going to Pakistan. And the reason I bring this up is because there's been some news coming up about
gone into Pakistan now,
right.
The Waziristan area.
Right, exactly. So that was there. And then another reason I wanted to kind of bring that up is also that we've talked with Iran now, or at least had people go in there. And I believe these were some of the criticisms that the McCain campaign lodged against the Obama campaign that wanted to invade our allies in Pakistan and appease by talking to our enemies in Iran. And, Governor Palin really stumbled when he asked her, he kind of asked her if there was actionable intelligence, if she would authorize or support, operations in Pakistan. So it seems like Obama was on the right side of this issue.
We have that clip. Thanks for the call, Mike. Here is Governor Palin last night talking to Charlie Gibson on ABC.
Charlie!
Basically, to be frank here, what we've seen is since the troop surge, so-called, in Iraq, and John McCain taking all the credit for it and then screwing up the timeline of the Anbar Awakening to make the argument that this troop surge brought the peace and not the agreement with Muqtada al-Sadr for peace, that every step of the way since the troop, so-called troop surge itself, this country's foreign policy has been right along the lines of everything that Barack Obama has said. To be clear, what Barack Obama is campaigning for in terms of foreign policy has been the strategy of the Bush administration pretty much since Barack Obama's been running for president. 866-303-2270, Claire in Davis, California. You're on Air America Radio.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I wanted to first say all states are purple.
Thank you.
Remember that. I'm a huge Tom Hartman supporter, a huge Air America supporter. I was one of the early advertisers.
Thank you.
When Air America was on in Sacramento. I followed lots of Tom's advice, and part of that being I am infiltrating the Democratic Party.
Woo-hoo!
I am running the campaign in Yolo County here near Sacramento in Davis, California. And I am a fact-based person, and I have extreme difficulty in coming up with an understanding of how you discuss with Republicans, with McCain supporters, in the form of stories. And so much of what we hear on Air America is facts, and I think we fact-based people feel deeply attached to that, and we continue to think that that will be the way to win the campaign and win the arguments.
When it's McCain's campaign that has said, this is not about the issues, i.e. facts, but this is rather about the narrative, the stories.
And every time you get into a conversation with a Republican and you try with facts, they will tell you a lie that simply doesn't add up with the facts. So you'll never get anywhere talking with a Republican about the facts.
So what are we left with, the stories?
We're left with the stories, and Tom Hartman has said that over and over again, and even his recent book talks about that. But what I would like to hear from Air America, and especially from Tom Hartman, I hope you'll pass on the word, is that we talk more about the stories, and that we all, you know, I've learned how to argue from Tom Hartman. Now I need to learn how to tell the stories.
Well, here's a beautiful story, and thank you, Claire. We had a guest on our local show this morning. I'm broadcasting from the Air America affiliate in Madison, Wisconsin, on the mic 92.1. A local journalist came in this morning because he recently wrote an op-ed piece called Why Barack Obama Makes Me Cry, and he told the story of his adopted 9-year-old son, who is black, and my journalist friend is white. And the nights that he spent with his child, sort of, he used to rub his son's back to help him go to sleep at night, and he would whisper sweet nothings in his boy's ear and tell him things like, you know, when you grow up, you can be anything you want to be. You're going to be, he said, my son's going to be a Heisman Trophy winner, and, you know, he's so proud of him. And the thing that he was thinking of when he would put his son to bed at night was, you can be anything you want to be except president. And the reason he wrote this piece about why Barack Obama makes me cry, and you can find it online at leftdelicious.blogspot.com. That's right, leftdelicious.blogspot.com, is because now when he puts his son to bed at night and he tells his son that he can do anything, now he means it. Now he knows that his son can be president. And I think the same argument can be made for parents of young girls or at least could have been made with Hillary Clinton. I wonder if the same argument's being made with Sarah Palin. But for this mixed-race family, the idea that their son could someday be president was not prevalent in their family just a year ago. But now, you know, this is a young man who can do anything, and anything's possible. And part of that is because of what Barack Obama has done. You want to talk about a glass ceiling. Man, that is a cement ceiling if I ever saw one. Janice in Phoenix, you're on Air America Radio. Good afternoon.
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Oh, okay. I'm outside. I called because last night we were watching the forum on service where John McCain and Barack Obama spoke, and it was so frustrating because after they spoke, Gregory, he's supposed to replace Keith Olbermann because Olbermann is too political. Gregory said a lie. They lied.
What did he say?
He said that both Barack Obama and John McCain were going to serve, said that they would serve in the, you know, other guy's cabinet as the service czar. That wasn't true. Barack Obama never said that.
No.
He never said that. They miscarried. They lied. He lied. And Andrea Mitchell got in there and said something that wasn't true. Chris Matthews, he said something that wasn't true. It was, you could just see how the spin was going there. It was so obscene. I was so upset.
Well, let's get it without the spin, and I'll play it without comment. This is Barack. I'm sorry. Let's start with John McCain. This is Senator McCain last night at the service forum at Columbia University.
I think we've got to involve more businesses and industries that routinely provide goods and services rather than rely on the federal government to do it.
In other words, don't rely on the federal government for help, Senator Barack Obama last night.
The fact is that we have to have government. When a hurricane strikes, as it did with Katrina, we have to have a FEMA that works, which, by the way, means that we should be encouraging young people, the best and the brightest, to get involved as civil servants, to pursue careers of public service. So we've got people who are trained in federal emergency management who are able to take on the job.
How about another comparison without comment?
It's easy for me to go to Washington and frankly, be somewhat divorced from the day-to-day challenges people have.
No, nice to hear. I want you leading the free world now, Senator Barack Obama last night.
If it weren't for government, then we wouldn't have a Civil Rights Act. If it weren't for government, we would not have the interstate highway system. If it weren't for government, we would not have some of our parks and natural wilderness areas that are so precious to America. And so part of my job, I think, as president, is to make government cool again.
Thank you for the call, Janice, and I do not think any comment is required there. No spin needed. Jerry in Walnut Creek, you're on Air America Radio.
Yeah, Lee, you know, I want to puff. What a show. Thank you for all the information you're getting out for us.
Well, I want to let you know, Jerry, hold on. I want to let you know that this has been the best part of my day, and it always is every day. So thank you for sharing it with me, man. It's been a pleasure.
Well, congratulations. We appreciate it. But my comments about the media and how their spin right now is trying to get everybody to believe that Barack Obama is actually running against Sarah Palin. The way I remember it, Barack Obama is running against John McCain.
Yes.
He's running for vice president, and he needs to get out there and remind everybody he's running against John McCain and make his attack focused against John McCain. And finally, in addressing the number of previous callers and stories you've had, I think a good resource for a lot of your listeners, if they want to get involved in activism, organizing activism, et cetera, would be go to unionjobs.com. They have a lot of great opportunities there for people who want to get involved in that movement.
Unionjobs.com. Jerry, you must be fairly lonely as a progressive in Walnut Creek.
No, there's plenty out here, trust me.
Good to hear, man. I used to go door to door for Peace Action in California out of the San Francisco office, and we spent a lot of time in Walnut Creek, and it was a tough road to hoe, I tell you. Peace is a tough sell in Walnut Creek, California. Keep up the good work there, Jerry. Thank you, man. Let's go quickly to Beth in Missouri. Beth, you're on Air America Radio. Good afternoon.
Hey, Lee, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I wanted to point out right quick, or ask a question actually. These people who are in foreclosure and are going to be purged from the voter rolls because of their address, what would stop them from going to Kinko's and getting a mailbox? Is that legal?
No, I do not believe P.O. boxes are valid when it comes to voter registration.
Really? Because I know Kinko's works as a physical address, like for other things.
Right. Well, you got a bad connection, so I'm going to let you go, Beth, but I appreciate the call. The best bet, because election rules and laws are different in each state, is to check with your local city clerk, county clerk, and find out statewide from your Secretary of State what you can and cannot do. Your vote matters. If it doesn't, none of this counts, and it's all academic. We'll wrap things up next with The World Can't Wait's Executive Director, Deborah Sweet. That's next. My name's Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman today. I want to thank you for being a part of the best part of my day, as it is every time I get this chance. It is a humbling honor, and I don't know what else to say other than I listen to Tom Hartman so I can learn something, and I look up to him. When I got this opportunity, all I can tell you is that it was a fairly daunting task, and I have spent the last couple of days trying to fill my brain with as much information as possible, and I'm afraid now my brain is full. But I've still got time to tell you this one story. It turns out that John McCain wanted to force rape victims to pay for their own sexual assault kits. This didn't just happen 15 years ago. This happened just last year as well. In 1994, according to DailyCoast.com, John McCain ended up voting against legislation which was pushed through Congress by Senator Joe Biden to help end the practice of charging rape victims for their own sexual assault exams. This is something that when Sarah Palin was mayor of Wasilla, the town charged rape victims for exams there. McCain not only opposed this way back in 1994, but also voted against it again in October of 2007. Really? Gonna make the victim the criminal here, or at least charge the victim for the crime of somebody else? It's unconscionable. And so what does John McCain really think about women? That's for you to decide. Our final guest this afternoon is the executive director of World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime, online at worldcan'twait.org, Deborah Sweet. Good afternoon, Deborah.
Hi, Lee.
Thank you for joining me today, and I've got to ask you, with 2 months left, why are we still trying to drive out the Bush regime?
Well, because George Bush just authorized attacks on Pakistan without any prior approval to that sovereign country because he's increasing troops into Afghanistan. And he's clearly still running the show, man.
Yeah, exactly. We just got a story from the Center for Economic and Policy Research today about our nefarious actions trying to subvert a democracy, allegedly, using U.S. aid funding in Bolivia.
You know, this agenda is very firmly in place. And the question now is, no matter who's the president, are the people of this country going to accept this continuing in our name?
But,
and that's what our movement is about. The world can't wait for us to take action against this.
So are we going to continue to try to hold the Bush regime accountable even after he leaves office?
Actually, I'm going to a conference this weekend in Andover, Mass. On the question of war crimes and crimes against humanity prosecutions with Vincent Bugliosi and Philippe Sands. And
well, Vincent Bugliosi wrote the book.
Talking about this, right.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the book on it.
And so what role can we play with 2 months left? A lot of attention is being focused on the upcoming election, but there's still 2 months where the Bush regime can, I don't know, say wage war with Iran?
Well, it's really 4 months because this wouldn't be till the end of January.
Thank you, Deborah.
They do leave office.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people's attention is not just going to the elections. It's being driven to the elections. And, you know, we were out, World Can't Wait was in Denver and St. Paul protesting at both of these conventions and calling out to the people and in even having a lot of very interesting discussions and debates with the delegates over what direction is this all going. And I feel very strongly that no matter who takes office, if you don't have a movement in this country of people refusing to go along in this direction of illegitimate occupations and the whole theocratic fascist direction that you are describing, not only under Palin, but frankly, we have Senator Joe Biden this Monday discovering that suddenly human life begins at conception.
Yeah,
what is that the basis for?
He said that on Meet the Press. Well, the basis is his Catholicism, but our own bishop in Madison, Wisconsin has called out Senator Joe Biden for not being a Catholic or not being a good enough Catholic. And really, this past weekend, we saw politicking from the pulpit in my backyard with our Catholic bishop in the Archdiocese of Madison. So this is really more about accountability, isn't it, Deborah, above the law?
Exactly. Fine. Have your own religious convictions, whatever they are. But we're talking about law. And in Colorado, where we were just protesting, there's a ballot initiative to change the Constitution of Colorado to say that human life begins at conception.
Well,
Can you imagine the number of laws that are going to get changed on that basis?
Anything having to do with a baby's health, a mother's health, or a pregnant woman's health?
Well, that doesn't matter.
This is a
fetus fetish these people have going.
Fetus fetish, that's creepy.
Real human beings, that, you know, that's not that important.
No, they're expendable.
In the scheme of things. You can bomb them in Afghanistan, whether they're civilians, babies, grandparents, which is, by the way, what they just did. And we can't allow ourselves to think that so 5 minutes ago.
I love the story.
War crimes done in our name.
Deborah Sweet, I love this story about how there was a journalist embedded with the military in Afghanistan for that bombing. Turns out the journalist was Oliver North.
Oh.
Deborah Sweet, I want to thank you so much for your work to hold the powers that be accountable. Find out more at worldcantwait.org. My name is Lee Rayburn, sitting in for Tom Hartman. I want to thank you again for having me. It has been an honor to sit in this chair for Tom Hartman. Tune in to him Monday as he broadcasts from an undisclosed location somewhere in South America. That'll do it for me today. I will see you down the road. Tag, you're it. It's Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.